Chapter 8. The Horn of Plenty. That night, after Nanny Ogg had gone to bed, Tiffany did have the bath that she'd been looking forward to. This was not something to be taken lightly. First, the tin bath had to be fetched from its hook on the back of the privy, which was at the bottom of the garden, and dragged through the dark, freezing night to a place of honour in front of the fire. Then, kettles had to be heated over the fire and on the black kitchen stove, and getting even 6 inches of warm water was an effort. Afterward, the water all had to be scooped out and into the sink, and the bath moved into a corner, ready to be taken outside in the morning. When you had to do all that, you might as well scrub every inch. Tiffany did one extra thing. She wrote "private" on a piece of cardboard and wedged it in the hanging lamp in the centre of the room, so that it could be read only from above. She wasn't sure it would put off any inquisitive gods, but she felt better for doing it. That night, she slept without dreaming. In the morning, snow had put a fresh coating on the drifts, and a couple of Nanny Ogg's grandchildren were building her a snowman on the lawn. They came in after a while and demanded a carrot for the nose and 2 lumps of coal for the eyes. Nanny took her to the isolated village of Slice, where people were always glad and surprised to see someone they weren't related to. Nanny Ogg ambled from cottage to cottage along the paths cut in the snow, drinking enough cups of tea to float an elephant and doing witchcraft in small ways. Mostly, it seemed to just consist of gossip, but once you got the hang of it, you could hear the magic happening. Nanny Ogg changed the way people thought, even if it was only for a few minutes. She left people thinking they were slightly better people. They weren't, but, as Nanny Ogg said, it gave them something to live up to. Then there was another night without dreams, but Tiffany woke up with a snap at 5:30, feeling odd. She rubbed the frost off the window and saw the snowman by moonlight. "Why do we do it?" she wondered. "As soon as there's snow, we build snowmen. We do worship the Wintersmith, in a way. We make the snow human. We give him coal eyes and a carrot nose to bring him alive. Oh, and I see the children gave him a scarf. That's what a snowman needs, a scarf to keep him warm." She went down into the silent kitchen, and for want of anything else to do, she scrubbed the table. Doing something with her hands helped her think. Something had changed, and it was her. She'd been worrying about what he would do and what he would think, as if she were just a leaf being blown about by the wind. She dreaded hearing his voice in her head, where he had no right to be. Well, not now. Not any more. He ought to be worried about her. Yes, she'd made a mistake. Yes, it was her fault. But she wasn't going to be bullied. You couldn't let boys go around raining on your lava and ogling other people's watercolours. Find the story, Granny Weatherwax always said. She believed that the world was full of story shapes. If you let them, they control you. But if you studied them, if you found out about them, you could use them, you could change them. Miss Treason had known all about stories, yes? She'd spun them like a spiderweb to give herself power. And they worked because people wanted to believe them. And Nanny Ogg told a story too. Fat, jolly Nanny Ogg who liked to drink, and another drink, thank you kindly, and was everyone's favourite grandmother. But those twinkling little eyes could bore into your head and read all your secrets. Even Granny Aching had a story. She'd lived in the old shepherding hut high on the hills, listening to the wind blowing over the turf. She was mysterious, alone, and the stories floated up and gathered around her, all those stories about her finding lost lambs, even though she was dead, all those stories about her still watching over people. People wanted the world to be a story, because stories had to sound right and they had to make sense. People wanted the world to make sense. Well, her story wasn't going to be the story of a little girl who got pushed around. There was no sense in that. Except, he's not actually bad. The gods in the mythology, they seemed to get the hang of being human, a bit too human sometimes. But how could a snowstorm or a gale ever find out? He was dangerous and scary, but you couldn't help feeling sorry for him. Someone hammered on Nanny Ogg's back door. It turned out to be a tall figure in black. "Wrong house," said Tiffany. "No one here is even a bit sick." A hand raised the black hood, and from its depths a voice hissed, "It's me, Aunt Grandma. Is she in?" "Mrs. Ogg's not up yet," said Tiffany. "Good. Can I come in?" At the kitchen table, over a cup of warming tea, Aunt Grandma revealed all. Life in the woods was not going well.
Two men came to see me about some stupid cow they both think they own," she said.
"That'll be Joe Broomsocket and Shifty Adams. I left you a note about them too," said Tiffany. "Whenever one or other of them gets drunk, they argue about that cow."
"What am I supposed to do about it?"
"Nod and smile. Wait until the cow dies," Miss Treason always said. "Or one of the men," said Tiffany. "It's the only way."
"And a woman came to see me with a sick pig."
"What did you do about it?"
"I told her I don't do pigs. But she burst into tears, so I tried Bangle's Universal Nostrum on it."
"You used that on a pig?" said Tiffany, shocked.
"Well, the pig witch uses magic, so I don't see why..."
Anagramma began defensively. "She knows what works," said Tiffany.
"It was perfectly all right when I got it down out of the tree. She didn't have to make all that fuss. I'm sure the bristles will grow back in time."
"It wasn't a spotted pig, was it? And a woman with a squint?" Tiffany asked.
"Yes, I think so. Does that matter?"
"Mrs. Stumper is very attached to that pig," said Tiffany reproachfully. "She brings him up to the cottage about once a week. It's usually just an upset stomach. She feeds him too much."
"Really? Then I won't open the door to her next time," said Anagramma firmly.
"No, let her in. Really? It's all just because she's lonely and wants to chat."
"Well, I should think I've got better things to do with my time than listen to an old lady who just wants to talk," said Anagramma indignantly.
Tiffany looked at her. "Where did you start, apart from banging the girl's head on the table until the brain started working?"
"Listen very carefully," she said. "I mean to her, not just to me. You've got no better use of your time than to listen to old ladies who want to talk. Everyone tells things to witches. So listen to everyone, and don't say much, and think about what they say and how they say it, and watch their eyes. It becomes like a big jigsaw puzzle, but you're the only one who can see all the pieces. You'll know what they want you to know, and what they don't want you to know, and even what they think no one knows. That's why we go around the houses. That's why you will go around the houses until you're part of their lives."
"All this just to get some power over a crowd of farmers and peasants?"
Tiffany spun around and kicked a chair so hard that it broke a leg. Anagramma backed away quickly.
"What did you do that for?"
"You're clever. You guess."
"Oh, I forgot. Your father is a shepherd."
"Good. You remembered."
Tiffany hesitated. Certainty was pouring into her brain courtesy of her third thoughts. Suddenly she knew Anagramma.
"And your father?" she asked.
"What?"
Anagramma instinctively drew herself up.
"Oh, he owns several farms."
"Liar."
"Well, perhaps I should say he is a farmer," the girl began, nervousness beginning to show.
"Liar." Anagramma backed away.
"How dare you talk to me like..."
"How dare you not tell me the truth?"
In the pause that opened, Tiffany heard everything. The faint crackle of wood in the stove, the sound of mice in the cellar, her own breathing roaring like the sea in the cave.
"He works for a farmer, all right," said Anagramma quickly,
and then looked shocked at her own words.
"We don't have any land. We don't even own the cottage. That's the truth if you want it. Happy now?"
"No, but thank you," said Tiffany.
"Are you going to tell the others?"
"No, it doesn't matter. But Granny Weatherwax wants you to make a mess of all this, do you understand? She's got nothing against you." Tiffany hesitated, then went on. "I mean, nothing more than she has against everyone. She just wants people to see that Mrs. Earwig's style of witchcraft doesn't work. This is just like her. She's not said a word against you. She's just let you have exactly what you wanted. It's like a story. Everyone knows that if you get exactly what you wish for, it all goes bad. And you wished for a cottage. And you're going to mess it up."
"I just need another day or two to get the hang..."
"Why? You're a witch with a cottage. You're supposed to be able to deal with it. Why take it on if you couldn't do it?"
"You're supposed to be able to deal with it, sheep girl. Why take it on if you couldn't do it?"
"So you're not going to help me?"
Anagramma glared at Tiffany, and then her expression, most unusually, softened a bit, and she said, "Are you all right?" Tiffany blinked. It's horrible to have your own voice echo back at you from the other side of your mind. "Look, I haven't got time," she said weakly. "Maybe the others can help out."
"I don't want them to know."
Panic cut curves on Anagramma's face. She can do magic, Tiffany thought.
She's just not good at witchcraft. She'll make a mess of it. She'll make a mess of people. She gave in. All right, I can probably spare some time. There's not many chores to do at Tir na n'Iog, and I'll explain things to the others. They'll have to know. They'll probably help. You learn fast. You could pick up the basic stuff in a week or so. Tiffany watched Anagramma's face. She was actually thinking about it. If she were drowning and you threw her a rope, she'd complain if it was the wrong colour.
Well, if they're just helping me, Anagramma said, brightening up.
You could almost admire the girl for the way she could rearrange the real world in her head. Another story, thought Tiffany. It's all about Anagramma.
Yes,
we'll be helping you, she sighed.
Perhaps we could even tell people that you girls are coming to me to learn things, said Anagramma hopefully.
People said that you should always count up to 10 before losing your temper. But if it was Anagramma you were dealing with, you had to know some bigger numbers, like perhaps 1 million.
No,
said Tiffany, I don't think we'll do that. You are the one doing the learning. Anagramma opened her mouth to argue, saw the look on Tiffany's face, and decided not to.
Yes, she said. Of course. Thank you.
That was a surprise. They probably will help, said Tiffany. It won't look good if one of us fails. To her amazement, the girl really was crying.
It's just that I didn't really think they were my friends.
I don't like her, said Petulia, who was knee-deep in pigs. She calls me the pig witch. Well, you are a pig witch, said Tiffany, who was standing outside the pig pen. The big shed was full of pigs. The noise was nearly as bad as the smell. Fine snow, like dust, was falling outside.
Yes, but when she says it, there's a good deal too much pig and not enough witch, said Petulia. Every time she opens her mouth, I think I've done something wrong.
She waved a hand in a pig's face and muttered a few words. The animal's eyes crossed, and it opened its mouth. It got a large dose of green liquid from the bottle. We can't just leave her to struggle, said Tiffany. People might get hurt.
Well, that wouldn't be our fault, would it? Said Petulia, dosing another pig.
She cupped her hands and shouted over the din to a man at the other end of the pens.
Fred, this lot's done.
Then she climbed out of the pen, and Tiffany saw that she'd got her dress tucked up to her waist and was wearing a pair of heavy leather breeches under it.
They're making a real fuss this morning, she said. Sounds like they're getting a bit frisky.
Frisky, said Tiffany.
Yes. Listen, you can hear the boars yelling in their shed, said Petulia. They can smell the spring.
But it's not even Hog's Watch yet. It's the day after tomorrow.
Anyway, the springtime sleeps under the snow, my dad always says, said Petulia, washing her hands in a bucket.
No ums, said Tiffany's third thoughts. When she's working, Petulia never says She's certain of things when she's working. She stands up straight. She's in charge.
Look, it will be our fault if we can see something wrong and don't do anything about it, said Tiffany.
Oh, Anagramma again, said Petulia. She shrugged.
Look, I can go over there maybe once a week after Hog's Watch and show her some of the basic stuff.
Will that make you happy?
I'm sure she'll be grateful.
I'm sure she won't be.
Have you asked any of the others?
No. I thought that if they knew you'd agreed, they probably would too, said Tiffany.
Ha! Well, I suppose that at least we can say we tried. You know, I used to think Anagramma was really clever because she knew a lot of words and could do sparkly spells. But show her a sick pig and she's useless.
Tiffany told her about Mrs. Stumper's pig, and Petulia looked shocked.
We can't have that sort of thing, she said. In a tree?
Perhaps I'll try to drop in this afternoon, then. She hesitated.
You know Granny Weatherwax won't be happy about this. Do we want to be caught between her and Mrs. Earwig?
Are we doing the right thing or not? Said Tiffany. Anyway, what's the worst she could do to us?
Petulia gave a short laugh with no humour in it at all.
Well, she said, first she could make our...
She won't.
I wish I was as sure as you, said Petulia.
All right, then, for Mrs. Stumper's pig.
Tiffany flew above the treetops, and the occasional high twig brushed against her boots. There was just enough winter sunshine to make the snow crisp and glittery, like a frosted cake. It had been a busy morning. The coven hadn't been very interested in helping Anagramma. The coven itself seemed a long time ago. It had been a busy winter.
All we did was muck about while Anagramma bossed us around, Dimity Hubbub had said,
while grinding minerals and very carefully tipping them, a bit at a time, into a tiny pot being heated by a candle.
I'm too busy to mess around with magic. It never did anything useful. You know her trouble. She thinks you can be a witch by buying enough things.
She just needs to learn how to deal with people, said Tiffany. At this point, the pot exploded.
Well, I think we can safely say that wasn't your everyday toothache cure, said Dimity, picking bits of pot out of her hair. All right, I can spare the odd day if Petulia's doing it, but it won't do much good.
Lucy Warbeck was lying full length and fully clothed in a tin bath full of water when Tiffany came by. Her head was all the way under the surface, but when she saw Tiffany peering in, she held up a sign saying, I'm not drowning. Miss Tick had said she would make a good witch finder, so she was training hard.
I don't see why we should help Anagramma, she said as Tiffany helped her get dry. She just likes putting people down with that sarcastic voice of hers. Anyway, what's it to you? You know she doesn't like you.
I thought we've always got on. More or less, said Tiffany.
Really? You can do stuff she can't even attempt. Like that thing where you go invisible. You do it, and you make it look easy. But you come along to the meetings and act like the rest of us, and help clear up afterward, and that drives her mad.
Look, I don't understand what you're going on about. Lucy picked up another towel.
She can't stand the idea that someone's better than her but doesn't crow about it.
Why should I do that? Said Tiffany, bewildered.
Because that's what she'd do if she was you, said Lucy, carefully pushing the knife and fork back into her piled-up hair.
All witches are a bit odd. It's best to get your oddness sorted out early.
She thinks you're laughing at her. And now, oh my word, she's got to depend on you. You might as well have pushed pins up her nose.
But Petulia had signed up, and so Lucy and the rest of them did too. Petulia had become the big success story since she'd won the witch trials with her famous pig trick 2 years ago. She'd been laughed at, well, by Anagramma, and everyone else had sort of grinned awkwardly. But she'd stuck to what she was good at, and people were saying that she'd got skills with animals that even Granny Weatherwax couldn't match. She'd got solid respect, too. People didn't understand a lot of what witches did, but anyone who could get a sick cow back on its feet, well, that person was someone you looked up to. So for the whole coven, after Hogswatch, it was going to be all about Anagramma time. Tiffany flew back toward T and Annie Og with her head spinning. She'd never thought anyone could be envious of her. Okay, she'd picked up one or two things, but anyone could do them. You just had to be able to switch yourself off. She'd sat on the sand of the desert behind the door. She'd faced dogs with razor teeth. They were not things she wanted to remember. And on top of all that, there was the Wintersmith. He couldn't find her without the horse. Everyone was sure of that. He could speak in her head, and she could speak to him. But that was a kind of magic and didn't have anything to do with maps. He'd been quiet for a while. He was probably building icebergs. She landed the broomstick on a small, bald hill among the trees. There was no cottage to be seen. She climbed off the stick, but held onto it, just in case. The stars were coming out. The Wintersmith liked clear nights. They were colder. And the words came. They were her words, in her voice, and she knew what they meant, but they had a sort of echo. Wintersmith, I command you. As she blinked at the high-toned way the words had sounded, the reply came back. The voice was all around her. Who commands the Wintersmith? I am the Summer Lady. Well, she thought, I'm a sort of stand-in. Then why do you hide from me? I fear your ice. I fear your chill. I run from your avalanches. I hide from your storms. Ah, right, this is goddess talk. Live with me in my world of ice. How dare you order me? Don't you dare to order me. But you chose to dwell in my winter. The Wintersmith sounded uncertain. I go where I please. I make my own way. I seek the leave of no man. In your country, you'll honour me, or there will be a reckoning. And that bit is mine, Tiffany thought, pleased to get a word in. There was a long silence, filled with uncertainty and puzzlement. Then the Wintersmith said, How may I serve you, my lady? No more icebergs looking like me. I don't want to be a face that sinks 1,000 ships. And the frost? May we share the frosts and the snowflakes? Not the frosts. You must not write my name on windows. That can only lead to trouble. But I may be permitted to honour you in snowflakes? Tiffany stopped. Goddesses shouldn't say, She was sure of that. Snowflakes will be acceptable, she said. After all, she thought, It's not as though they have my name on them. I mean, most people won't notice, and if they do, they won't know it's me.
Then there will be snowflakes, my lady, until the time we dance again. And we will, for I am making myself a man.
The voice of the Wintersmith went. Tiffany was alone again among the trees, except she wasn't.
I know you're still there, she said, her breath leaving a sparkle in the air. You are, aren't you? I can feel you. You're not my thoughts. I'm not imagining you. The Wintersmith has gone. You can speak with my mouth. Who are you?
The wind made snow fall from the trees nearby. The stars twinkled. Nothing else moved.
You are there, said Tiffany. You've put thoughts in my head. You've even made my own voice speak to me. That's not going to happen again. Now that I know the feeling, I can keep you out.
If you have anything to say to me, say it now. When I leave here, I will shut my mind to you. I will not let...
How does it feel to be so helpless, sheep girl?
You're summer, aren't you? Said Tiffany.
And you are like a little girl dressing in her mother's clothes. Little feet in big shoes, dress, trailing in the dirt. The world will freeze because of a silly child.
Tiffany did something that it would be impossible for her to describe, and the voice ended up like a distant insect.
It was lonely on the hill and cold, and all you could do was keep going. You could scream, cry, and stamp your feet, but apart from making you feel warmer, it wouldn't do any good. You could say it was unfair, and that was true, but the universe didn't care, because it didn't know what fair meant. That was the big problem about being a witch. It was up to you. It was always up to you.
Hogswatch came, with more snow and some presents. Nothing from home, even though some coaches were getting through. She told herself there was probably a good reason, and tried to believe it. It was the shortest day of the year, which was convenient because it fitted neatly with the longest night. This was the heart of winter, but Tiffany didn't expect the present that arrived the next day. It had been snowing hard, but the evening sky was pink and blue and freezing. It came out of the pink evening sky with a whistling noise and landed in Nanny Ogg's garden, throwing up a shower of dirt and leaving a big hole.
"Well, that's goodbye to the cabbages," said Nanny, looking out the window.
Steam was rising from the hole when they went outside, and there was a strong smell of sprouts. Tiffany peered through the steam. Dirt and stalks covered the thing, but she could make out something rounded. She let herself slide farther into the hole, right down amid the mud and steam and the mysterious thing. It wasn't very hot now, and as she scraped stuff away, she began to have a nasty feeling that she knew what it was. It was, she was sure, the thingy that Anoia had talked about. It looked mysterious enough, and as it emerged from the mud, she knew she'd seen it before.
"Are you all right down there? I can't see you for all this steam," Nanny Ogg called.
By the sound of it, the neighbours had come running. There was some excited chattering. Tiffany quickly scraped mud and mashed cabbages over the arrival and called up, "I think this might explode. Tell everyone to get indoors, and then reach down and grab my hand, will you?"
There was some shouting above her and the sound of running feet. Nanny Ogg's hand appeared, waving around in the fog, and between them they got Tiffany out of the hole.
"Shall we hide under the kitchen table?" said Nanny, as Tiffany tried to brush mud and cabbage off her dress.
Then Nanny winked.
"If it is going to explode."
Her son Sean came around the house with a bucket of water in each hand and stopped, looking disappointed that there was nothing to do with them.
"What was it, Mum?" he panted.
Nanny looked at Tiffany, who said,
A giant rock fell out of the sky." "Giant rocks can't stay up in the sky, miss," said Sean.
"I expect that's why this one fell down, lad," said Nanny briskly.
"If you want to do something useful, you can stand guard and make sure nobody comes near it." "What shall I do if it explodes, Mum?"
"Come and tell me, will you?" said Nanny.
She hurried Tiffany into the cottage, shut the door behind them, and said,
"I'm a dreadful old liar, Tiff, and it takes one to know one. What's down there?"
"Well, I don't think it's going to explode," said Tiffany. "And if it did, I think the worst that'll happen is that we'll be covered in coleslaw. I think it's the cornucopia."
There was the sound of voices outside, and the door was flung open.
"Blessings be upon this house," said Granny Weatherwax, stamping snow off her boots. Your boy said I shouldn't come in, but I think he was wrong. I came as quick as I could. What's happened?
We've got cornucopias, said Naniog, whatever they are.
It was later that evening. They'd waited until it was dark before pulling the cornucopia out of the hole. It was a lot lighter than Tiffany had expected. In fact, it had an air about it of something very, very heavy, which, for reasons of its own, had become light just for a while. Now it was on the kitchen table, wiped clean of mud and cabbages. Tiffany thought it looked vaguely alive. It was warm to the touch and seemed to vibrate slightly under her fingers. According to Chaffinch, she said, with the mythology open on her lap, the god Blind Io created the cornucopia from a horn of the magical goat Almeg to feed his two children by the goddess Bisonomy, who was later turned into a shower of oysters by Epidity, the god of things shaped like potatoes, after insulting Resonata, goddess of weasels, by throwing a mole at her shadow. It is now the badge of office of the summer goddess.
I always said there used to be far too much of that sort of thing in the old days, said Granny Weatherwax.
The witches stared at the thing. It did look a bit like a goat horn, but much larger.
How does it work? Said Naniog.
She stuck her head inside it and shouted, Hello! Hellos came back, echoing for a long time, as if they'd gone much farther than you would expect them to.
Looks like a great big seashell to me, was the opinion of Granny Weatherwax.
The kitten, Yew, patted around the giant thing, sniffing daintily at it. Grebo was hiding behind the saucepans on the top shelf, Tiffany checked.
I don't think anyone knows, she said. But the other name for it is the Horn of Plenty.
A horn? Can you play a tune on it? Asked Nanny.
I don't think so, said Tiffany. It contains, things.
What sort of things? Said Granny Weatherwax.
Well, technically, everything, said Tiffany. Everything that grows. She showed them the picture in the book. All sorts of fruits, vegetables, and grain were spilling from the cornucopia's wide mouth.
Mostly fruit, though, said Nanny. Not many carrots, but I suppose they're up in the pointy end. They'd fit better there.
Typical artist, said Granny. He just painted the showy stuff in the front, too proud to paint an honest potato.
She poked at the page with an accusing finger.
And what about these cherubs? We're not going to get them too, are we? I don't like to see little babies flying through the air.
They turn up in a lot of old paintings, said Naniog. They've put them in to show it's art and not just naughty pictures of ladies with not many clothes on.
Well, they're not fooling me, said Granny Weatherwax.
Go on, Tiff, give it a go, said Naniog,
walking around the table.
I don't know how, said Tiffany. There aren't any instructions.
And then, too late, Granny shouted,
You, come out of there!
But with a flick of her tail, the white kitten trotted inside. They banged on the horn. They held it upside down and shook it. They tried shouting down it. They put a saucer of milk in front of it and waited. The kitten didn't return. Then Naniog prodded gently inside the cornucopia with a mop, which, to no one's great surprise, went farther inside the cornucopia than there was cornucopia on the outside.
She'll come out when she's hungry, she said reassuringly.
Not if she finds something to eat in there, said Granny Weatherwax, peering into the dark.
I shouldn't think she'll find cat food, said Tiffany, examining the picture closely. There may be milk, though.
Yo, come out of there this minute, Granny commanded, in a voice fit to shake mountains.
There was a distant meep.
Perhaps she's got stuck, said Nanny. I mean, it's like a spiral growing smaller at the end, right? Cats ain't very big at going backward.
Tiffany saw the look on Granny's face and sighed.
Feagles, she said to the room in general. I know there are some of you in this room. Come out, please.
Feagles appeared from behind every ornament. Tiffany tapped the cornucopia.
Can you get a little kitten out of here? She asked.
Just that. Aye, nae problemo, said Rob Anybody. I was hoping it was going to be something difficult.
The knack-mack feagles disappeared into the horn at a trot. Their voices died away. The witches waited. They waited some more. And some more.
Feagles? Shouted Tiffany into the hole.
She thought she heard a very distant, very faint, Crevens! If it can produce grain, they might have found beer in there, said Tiffany. And that means they'll only run out when the beer runs out, too.
Cats can't feed on beer, snapped Granny Weatherwax.
Well, I'm fed up with waiting, said Nanny. Look, there's a little hole in the pointy end, too. I'm going to blow into it.
She tried to, at least. Her cheeks went big and red, and her eyes bulged, and it was pretty clear that if the horn didn't blow, then she would. At which point, the horn gave up. There was a distant and unmistakably curly rumbling noise, which got louder and louder.
Can't see anything yet,
said Granny, looking into the wide mouth of the horn. Tiffany pulled her away, just as Ewe galloped out of the cornucopia with her tail straight out and her ears flattened. She skidded across the table, leapt onto Granny Weatherwax's dress, scrambled onto her shoulder, and turned and spat defiance. With a cry of, "Crevans!" Feagles poured out of the horn. "Behind the sofa, everyone!" yelled Nanny. "Run!" Now the rumble was like thunder. It grew and grew and then stopped. In the silence, three pointy hats rose from behind the sofa. Small blue faces rose from behind everything. Then there was a noise very similar to prat, and something small and wizened rolled out of the mouth of the horn and dropped onto the floor. It was a very dried-up pineapple. Granny Weatherwax brushed some dust off her dress. "You'd better learn to use this," she said to Tiffany. "How? Don't you have any idea?" "No." "Well, it's turned up for you, madam, and it's dangerous." Tiffany gingerly picked up the cornucopia, and again there was that definite feeling of some hugely heavy thing pretending very successfully to be light. "Maybe it needs some magic word," suggested Nanny Ogg, "or there's somewhere special that you press." As Tiffany turned it in the light, something gleamed for a moment. "Hold on, these look like words," she said. She read, "Panda pu epithimis capiso io ena onoma." "All that you desire, I give upon a name," murmured the memory of Dr. Bustle. The next line said, "Megalono, sistilome." "I grow, I shrink," Dr. Bustle translated. "I think I might have an idea," she said. And in memory of Miss Treason, she declared, "Ham sandwich." Nothing happened. Then Dr. Bustle lazily translated, and Tiffany said, "Ena sanduit to zambon me mustada." With a flap, a ham sandwich sailed out of the mouth of the cornucopia and was expertly caught by Nanny, who bit into it. "Not bad at all," she announced. "Try a few more." "Dulce mupola sanduit ton zambon," said Tiffany, and there was the kind of sound you get when you disturb a cave full of bats. "Stop," she yelled, but nothing stopped. Then Dr. Bustle whispered, and she shouted, "Min pirisotero sanduit ton zambon." There were a lot of sandwiches. The pile reached the ceiling, in fact. Only the tip of Nanny Ogg's hat was visible, but there were some muffled noises farther down the heap. An arm thrust out, and Nanny Ogg forced her way through the wall of bread and sliced pig, chewing thoughtfully. "No mustard, I notice. Well, we can see that everyone around here has a good supper tonight," she said. "And I can see I'm going to have to make an awful lot of soup, too. Best not to try it again in here, though, all right?" "I don't like it at all," snapped Granny Weatherwax. "Where does all that stuff come from, eh? Magic food never fed anyone properly." "It's not magic, it's a god thing," said Nanny Ogg. "Like manners from heaven, that sort of stuff. I expect it's made out of raw firmament." "In fact, it's merely a living metaphor for the boundless fecundity of the natural world," whispered Dr. Bustle in Tiffany's head. "You don't get manners from heaven," said Granny. "Oh, this was in foreign parts a long time ago," said Nanny, turning to Tiffany. "If I was you, dear, I'd take it into the woods tomorrow and see what it can do. Although, if you don't mind, I could really do with some fresh grapes right now." "Geetha, Og, you can't use the cornucopia of the gods as a larder," said Granny. "The feet business was bad enough." "But it is one," said Nanny Og innocently. "It's the larder. It's like everything waiting to grow next spring." Tiffany put it down very carefully. There was something alive about the cornucopia. She wasn't at all sure that it was just some magical tool. It seemed to be listening. As it touched the tabletop, it began to shrink until it was the size of a small vase. "Excuse me," said Rob Anybody, "but does it do beer?" "Beer?" said Tiffany, without thinking. There was a trickling noise. All eyes turned to look at the vase. Brown liquid was foaming over the lip. Then all eyes turned to Granny Weatherwax, who shrugged. "Don't look at me," she said sourly. "You're going to drink it anyway." "It is alive," Tiffany thought, as Nanny Ogg hurried off to find some more mugs. "It learns. It's learned my language." Around midnight, Tiffany woke up because a white chicken was standing on her chest. She pushed it off and reached down for her slippers and found only chickens. When she got the candle alight, she saw half a dozen chickens on the end of the bed. The floor was covered in chickens. So were the stairs. so was every room down below. In the kitchen, chickens had overflowed into the sink. They weren't making much noise, just the occasional work a chicken makes when it's a bit uncertain about things, which is more or less all the time. The chickens were shuffling along patiently to make room work. They were doing this because the cornucopia, now grown just a bit bigger than a full-grown chicken, was gently firing out a chicken every 8 seconds. Work. As Tiffany watched, another one landed on the mountain of ham sandwiches. Work. Marooned on top of the cornucopia was you, looking very puzzled. Work. And in the middle of the floor, Granny Weatherwax snored gently in the big armchair, surrounded by fascinated hens. Work. Apart from the snoring, the chorus of works, and the rustling of shuffling chickens, it was all very peaceful in the candlelight. Work. Tiffany glared at the kitten. She rubbed up against things when she wanted to be fed, didn't she? Work. And made meep noises? Work. And the cornucopia could work out languages, couldn't it? Work. Now, she whispered, no more chickens. And after a few seconds, the flow of chickens ceased. Work. But she couldn't really leave it like that. She shook Granny by the shoulder, and as the old woman awoke, she said, the good news is, a lot of the ham sandwiches have gone. Work.